Live from the Pattawanami Studios in Idaho Falls, Idaho, I'm your host, Jared Andrus, and welcome to History on the Dark Side. Hello again and welcome to History on the Dark Side. Today, my special co-host is Duke, also known as the Duck of Death. Okay, so he's really only known that by me. This is my son, Duke. How you doing, Duke?
I'm doing pretty good.
Duke has not seen the first two episodes, so he's flying blind here with the Nazi medicine today.
Very blind. Can't see a thing.
Well, the thickness of the glasses makes that apparent all. But with Katie, we talked a little bit about the Volk and this long worldview forward and backward that Germany was trying to develop. We talked about the eugenics, the science, well, the pseudoscience of being able to classify people by measuring and color and to determine and how that kind of got used in the Nazi system. We'll see a lot more of that moving forward. Then with Bobby Joe, we talked about the sterilization program. And so that's where we're going to pick things up today.
Cool.
Pretty excited?
Yeah.
Okay. So let us begin, shall we?
We shall.
When we left off, we had just talked about how there's kind of a Rubicon when people in the medical community are sterilizing people. Okay, it's reasonable, even if you're sterilizing people because of, you know, genetic defects like deafness, blindness, epilepsy. The weird one is feeble-mindedness. That doesn't have a real clinical definition. Like, there's probably been times I may have called you feeble-minded. I didn't mean I want you dead. I just meant, use your noggin, kid. You can do this. So we've got these categories of people where we're sterilizing. And it seems not too much of a stretch for the medical community to do that. And the other big thing that they're taking into account is that they're looking at the Hippocratic Oath, you know, do no harm. Mm-hmm. They're looking at what do I do for the greater German body, not just for a German citizen. They're looking down the road, like if I sterilize you so you don't have genetically messed up offspring, I'm doing good for the greater body of Germany moving forward. I'm still fulfilling my oath, even if maybe it's questionable ethically as to whether that's the best thing for you right now. But you think about someone with, let's say you get frostbite, right? And you get gangrene in a finger. What are you going to do?
And now, a special word from our sponsors.
Hey, Bubba. What you doing over there? Well, I was fixing to go do some chores or something, but man, I just ain't got no kind of energy. Yeah, I know what you mean. I've been thinking about, you know, doing some running or something to try and lose some weight. It's starting to be a problem. Yeah, I reckon I need to stop smoking too. You know, it's so bad right now, even Cousin Lulu won't go out with me. It's just like doggone hard to have to deal with all these things at once. It's too bad there ain't no way to deal with them all at the same time.
Well, maybe there is.
Who the heck is you?
Well, I'm Dr. Spencer Preston from Science.
Ray Ray, I ain't fixing to listen to no dang Yankee doctor.
Well, what if I told you that I represented the same company that created chicken and beer bubblegum?
Chicken and beer bubblegum? I tell you what, that there changed my life. We better listen to him, Bubba.
Have you two ever heard of popcorn lung?
Popcorn lung? I ain't never heard that. I heard of pickled pig's feet, though.
You know, it's a condition that people get from a vape.
A vape?
Yeah, an electronic cigarette.
Electronic cigarettes? Whoa, Ray Ray, he really is from science.
When vaping first started, it was used as a way for people to get away from all the tar, tobacco, and chemicals, and keep all the high that you get from smoking a cigarette.
I mean, that sounds pretty good.
But then some people started developing a condition called popcorn lung, where their lungs wasn't working right, and they had trouble breathing, and sometimes they even needed a transplant.
Well, that don't sound no dang good at all.
It wasn't until now. Due to science, we can turn that popcorn into caramel corn, candy corn, or hot butter goodness.
Well, woo-wee, that sounds good.
Introducing Corn Puffs, the only vape mod around that's able to make your popcorn lung popcorn done. It'll get you more energy because nicotine's a natural stimulant. And it'll help you lose weight because it's also an appetite suppressant. And it'll help you quit smoking because, well, that's what the dang thing's for.
I tell you what, Ray Ray, I'm fixing to call Cousin Lulu and see if I can ask her to go to the prom. Bubba, you know she like 22 years old, don't you? Yeah, I reckon I better get that date before she done graduate. She might make it any year now.
Hello?
Hey there, Miss Lulu. Guess what? Today your lucky day. And now back to the dark side.
I get frostbite. I get gangrene in a finger.
I don't know what gangrene means.
That means the finger's dead. What do I do?
You chop it off.
You chop it off. Why?
Because it's not useful.
What happens if you don't chop the dead finger off?
I have no clue.
The tissue will continue that's dead will spread. Necrosis. It'll just start killing more and more and more and more. If you don't chop it off and cut it out, you're going to die.
Oh, I actually didn't know that.
So when you see these people who got stuck on Mount Everest and they got nubs for hands, it's because they chopped them off, because if they didn't, they would die. Not because, oh, my finger was useless. So in some ways, the medical community is looking at these defects that way. That, hey, for the greater body of Germany moving forward, we got to cut out these little dead spots, these little tumors, these little problems to keep the whole body alive and healthy. Make sense?
Gotcha.
Okay. So if we're starting from there, the next logical step, okay, we've categorized everybody who's got genetic problems. We've decided that if they have more kids with more genetic problems, it costs the country more money, and it takes away from the general health of the whole society. Okay? So later on, in generations to come, Germany should be healthier because they don't have as many of these kind of people. I'm not saying I agree with this, but you get the concept?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At the same time, they have some positive eugenics going on, where they go, you know what we want is these people that are healthy, we really want them getting after and having some kids. Let's get like rabbits and go.
Let's go Aryans.
Yeah. So they're trying to increase the birth rate so they have more people. You can't have a little tiny master race. You need a great big one. And so they're encouraging that. And some ways you encourage the birth rate, you encourage marriage, obviously, you discourage abortion, and you discourage homosexuality. Those things don't help you have more kids. It ties in nicely. The predominant religions in Germany are, any guesses?
Christianity.
Yeah, but more specifically, you've got a huge Catholic population and a really big Lutheran population. Martin Luther's German. So you've got these two big religious influences that fit right in with that. They're kind of anti-abortion, anti-homosexuality. So yeah, that's an easy one to sell. What's the one problem with this whole thing? We've made weird people who are disabled or broken or whatever you want to call them less likely in the future. We're increasing the population of healthy people. But what do I still have over here?
Those disabled people.
I still have those disabled, broken, otherwise messed up people. Okay? Where do you think we're headed next, kid?
Oh boy, time for the slaughtering.
Yeah. Yeah, we decide that what needs to happen is we need to get rid of some of these people. Now, how are you going to sell that? Because most people don't just go, you know what would be cool if we just murdered a bunch of our population? I think that would help. Some people do, Pol Pot, you know, maybe Stalin.
Oh, yeah, that's
Hitler, obviously.
That's the off case that I'm going to write next year. You should just, like, genocide a bunch of people protect water.
To protect water?
Yeah, because people are, like, the main cause of harming water.
Debate's a weird world. Stay out of debate, kids. Play football and basketball. Anyway.
Don't stay out of debate. Join policy. It's dying.
Because of, apparently, human interaction with the water. Anyway, so we got to do something about these people. So the government's got to sell this program in a way that people can tolerate it. If you're going to kill off some segment of society, how are you going to do it so that people can be like, well, I don't feel warm and fuzzy, but I can understand at least that? You got to get something out of these
people. They should just, like, do what Salem Green did and, like, oh, we're sending these people to, like, a health camp and then put them into the food.
I'm impressed that you know Soylent Green, because that was a movie from before my time, so good job. Clearly, either me or Grandma or Grandpa has done some good parenting here.
It was Mom, actually.
Oh, Mama got you with the Soylent Green. It's made of people. Yes. Okay, so we could just flat lie, and there's going to be some of that. You don't remember Dr. Kevorkian, do you?
No.
Jack Kevorkian. I believe he was in Oregon. This is back when I was your age, okay? Huge issue. It got debated all the time. He was all about helping you, assisting you commit suicide.
Oh, okay.
So if you, for whatever reason, you're like, man, I'm going to off myself because I'm in a lot of pain from cancer or I have some other weird disease and I just can't go on anymore. I want to kill myself, but you know what? I want to do it so I actually die and I want to do it so I'm not in a lot of pain. It's my choice, but I don't know how to do it right. Dr. Jack's going to come hook you up. How's he doing that? How do you help somebody kill themselves? That's weird, right? Tell me this sounds weird.
Yeah, that's...
Okay, well, it was a big ethical debate back in the day because, man, if you're going to commit suicide, that's your moral choice, whether society agrees with it or not. You've made a choice that mostly affects only you. Obviously, it affects other people in your life, but you kind of get it. But Dr. Jack rolls in and he's like, dude, I got you, man. What we're going to do is we're going to give you these drugs. We're going to make this little machine because I'm not going to kill you. I ain't trying to kill nobody, but I don't want you to suffer. So we're going to build this little machine and you hit this button, basically, and it's going to administer these drugs similar to how people on death row, when they die by lethal injection. It's a lot like that. He would come, work out the stuff for you, set you up. You still had to push play. He's not doing it for you. And he would stay there, make sure it worked, pronounce you dead. Yay, you did it. You killed yourself. Newsflash. Don't kill yourself, kids. It's not worth it.
Don't do it.
Anyways, so this went on. And you can imagine it's a huge moral dilemma in America, right? Like, it was one thing when you wanted to kill yourself. But now you've elicited support from a doctor. And that's the key. Hippocratic oath. Doctor, do no harm. Am I harming you if I help you commit suicide because your life's so bad? I don't need a yes or no, but you see the dilemma. Mm-hmm. Big dilemma. Big, that's hard to sell. So how he would sell it, okay, is he would always talk about it in terms of mercy. Hey, this person's suffering. I'm not going to go just because they're having a bad day. I talk to them. I interview them. I make sure they're in some pain. Because if you're just like, my girlfriend just dumped me or my boyfriend broke up with me, then probably this isn't going to work. This is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. But if you're at the end of life, maybe you're really old. This was common for older people too. And you've got cancer or something. Hey, I'll help you. Mercy kill. That's what he called it. There's actually a law passed, I think in Oregon again, where it was a mercy killing law. And it became a huge constitutional debate. It was a big deal. This is exactly what the Germans did. We're going to call it mercy killing. We're helping people out. They don't want to live that way. They're in pain. Psychological, physical, who knows? Who do you think's first to go? This is interesting. Heck no. You're like thinking of the vengeance train already. You're like, we're on this tear. That would have been more Nazi-ish, right? Mm-hmm. But this is, when I tell you, you're going to be like, oh no, that's more Nazi-ish. Those people are, oh. So first person to go, let me get his name right here. 5-month-old baby boy, Gerhard Kretschmar. Why is this 5-month-old baby the first guy to go?
Babies don't provide anything to society.
Okay, wait for it. Because when you see what happens here, you're going to be like, oh, dude, really? You had to put this idea in his head? So daddy's name is Richard, thinks that his disabled son, Gerhard, is just a monster. He's like, ugh. And it's unfortunate that people, you know, feel this way. It happens all the time. Even today, it's kind of gross to think about. You have a disabled child, not a monster, but he's just beside himself. His local doctor's got nothing to do with it. He's like, this child's alive, so there you go. So daddy, hold on, what's daddy's name? Richard. Richard's the father. He writes a letter to somebody. Guess who?
The man with the mustache.
He writes a letter to Hitler. Hey, I've got this little son. He's so defected and messed up, and he's a burden, and it's a horrible life. You know, piles on. What can be done? Hitler sends Hitler's doctor, to go meet Richard and little Gerhard. And that's the first person to die through euthanasia under the Nazi regime. And now, here goes Hitler, right? Wait a minute. I have an idea.
Of course.
What if we just do this to everybody? It wasn't even Hitler's great idea. Some dad who couldn't deal with his own kid, and I don't know exactly what the deformities were, what the, you know, problems were. I imagine they were pretty severe. I hope so, because, man, if dude just had a cleft palate or, like, a club foot, you suck. You're already not dad of the year, right? You got problems. But if you're like, he got one crossed eye, and you're calling Hitler? That's bullcrap, dude. Anyway, so I don't have a lot of respect for old Richard, but he gets this ball in motion, and it's like this perfect fit for the Nazi plan of what are we going to do with these other people. If I'm Hitler and I want to kill people I don't like, which he does, you know, Hitler's not subtle. He doesn't beat around the bush a whole lot. He kind of wrote this whole book, Mein Kampf, that told you what he was planning to do. He didn't sugarcoat a lot of it. It's pretty plain language that, you know, some of these undesirables, they got to go. He talks about life unfit for life. What do you suppose that means, dude?
That you're not smart.
Could be. Could be that you're just a little weak in the brain, one way or another.
No. Like that the person who came with the idea of life without deserving life is not smart.
Oh, okay. Well, that's where the Nazi plan gets to. We've already sort of cleaned house a little bit moving forward. The future is going to be better because we're stopping this from happening again through sterilization. But we've got all these people. And there's one more big tipping point that's going to push people politically. Now, we haven't really got to medically, but politically, that's going to push it from we're doing sterilization to you know what? We got some reasons to just kill these people. And that's going to be the start of the war. When the war starts, you have a sudden new need for something that all these people are taking up. Where are disabled people living?
Not by themselves.
Right. They're often not at home. And if they are, a lot of times they're out of the grasp of the greater Nazi movement, right? But a lot of them are living in like asylums. They're living in hospitals. They're there in a group, in a medical building. But if you have a war, what would you rather use those beds for?
Soldiers.
Bingo. Soldiers. So suddenly there's a very immediate need for all the staff, equipment, hospital beds we can get. Before, we talked in theoretical terms about, and they're teaching this stuff in like grade school. Hey, if so-and-so's crazy and he costs this many Reichsmarks to support him in his lifetime, how many books could we have bought for school children? This is the stuff they're teaching little kids. They've monetized their word math program, you know, math problems. Word problems in Nazi Germany are twisted. And they do that when they're very, very young. What's the point of that?
So that, like, they think that what they're doing is right.
Right. You're planting seeds. You're planting seeds. So now when there's a war, you've built up this idea of the German soldiers the greatest thing ever. Right? I mean, you've seen their propaganda, right? I mean, they're the perfect blue hair. Well, probably not blue hair, right? Maybe blue-eyed and blonde hair. And they've got the big square jaws, and they've got the perfect uniform, and they look strong, and they're off to fight the evil, whatever it is, wherever it is. Those are your heroes. I mean, it makes sense that Hitler would make this a heroic thing. He was a soldier in World War I. You know, I think he earned a Iron Cross second class or something. So he was somewhat decorated, not like hugely decorated for valor or anything, but he got some awards. So he saw some action. He was involved in some things. He's going to have a high opinion of himself, let alone the people that he served with. And so there's your hero. So now we're not just going to compare, here's a regular healthy person your age, and here's crazy or crippled or deaf or blind or epileptic person. Now we've got this heroic soldier who's been wounded at the front fighting for your needs. And he comes home wounded. What's he need? And who's in his place?
This crazy person.
Right. Whoever it is. So they're going to start killing people. Now, do medical people ever kill?
Yes.
They do. They really do. You can probably find instances even today where when a baby's born and it's just horribly disfigured and all messed up, maybe they don't try as hard to revive it. Okay, and this probably happens today, even our advanced America. Nobody wants to talk about it. But we're going to go back like 80, 90 years. This is going to be much more common. We don't have all the technology to save darn near every baby like we do now. And so you might have a lot of these kind of things happen quietly. People in hospitals, these asylums, if they really were kind of crazy and looked like they're suffering, you know, you could do things to either not let them, I mean, you could starve someone to death, which sounds horrible, but it was a way to get rid of them if maybe you actually felt sorry for them and the condition they were in. That's a real thing. Again, nothing I ever hope to have to wrap my head around ethically. I don't think I would be that person, but, you know, I don't know. Like your mom, right? She had cancer. Gross, nasty, bad at the end. The end for her is very short. She was really bad for a little while and pretty good for most of the time, thank goodness. She wanted me, if she ever got so bad that this, that, or the other happened, to just, I don't know, choke her out or something, you know, throw the pillow on her and just let her get it over with. Now, that didn't happen. Like, I think you were there, so you know that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But that's, in a way, related to what we're talking about here. Sometimes things like that happen, and you feel like it's the right choice, maybe. So that's that ethical dilemma. And doctors, nurses, they have these dilemmas, too. But now we're escalating, and you have this whole other level of pressure. If my goal is to protect the German public body, moving forward into a time past my own lifetime, if I'm trying to protect that body, and my choice is to give proper care to this soldier or to this person who's got whatever disease, that's going to feel a little different. And so we've got some, not all in the medical community, that can kind of embrace this idea. If you're going to get rid of a class of people, who do you start with?
A class?
A group of people.
Oh. And the disabled people.
So that's where they start, and they start at the bottom. They start with kids. Babies and children. Those are the first people to go. Why would that make sense?
Because I guess they could trick the adults to, like, still doing work, in a sense.
What do you mean?
It's like having the hamster on the wheel and then putting, like, a carrot in front of the wheel. You know, you just get them running for something that, like, they can't get to. But with kids, like, they can't really do that.
Who can't really? I'm just lost on your analogy here.
Oh, like kids can't really be on that wheel.
Okay. So they're a vulnerable segment of society. Okay? You know when they're not vulnerable?
When they're adults.
Well, it depends who's around. If I have a sick kid and they are in the hospital a block or two away, how likely am I to go see them sometime? So if they're going to disappear or die of illness, and on these death certificates, it's always going to say stuff like natural causes and pneumonia and things like that. It's never going to say, oh, by the way, we killed your kid. Okay, that's not on anybody's death certificate. We killed your kid. Sorry. We did it for Germany 900 years from now. It's just kind of, you know, we had to. The corporal needed a bed to sleep in. That isn't how it. But they pick kids who are further away from home, okay? So to start with, they're already just further away from home. You start there, and you start sending out, you know, the certificates that, hey, something happened. Your kid got pneumonia and died. Now, if I send 20 of those, if the families are all over the place, they don't know, right? So if you're at your local hospital and you do that, there's 20 families might be right on there. And they're going to be like, how the crap did 40 kids get pneumonia yesterday? That's going to raise some eyebrows, right? Mm-hmm. If you take the kids and get them further away from home, or start with the ones who are already further away from home, you get a lot less of that. Now, it's going to be a hard crime to investigate, right? Yeah. We trust doctors. Do kids that are already sick or have some kind of disease, are they any more or less likely to die of pneumonia?
Yeah, they're probably more likely to die.
Right. You take, like, you know, your aunt. She's got cerebral palsy.
I got a lot.
The one with cerebral palsy.
Gotcha.
It's hard to know when she's sick. It's hard for her to express what her symptoms are. And so because of that, she's probably more likely to have greater complications from a health crisis or die at some point because she can't express her symptoms or her needs in a timely fashion to get help sooner. That's something that, you know, I think about, I'm sure Grandma and Grandpa think about all the time. Like, That's going to be rough. So back then, even in Germany, you add all those years. Yeah, if you've got a person who's already mentally or physically defective, it's probably easy to imagine, oh, well, they just got this disease, I guess. I don't know how much investigation you can even do. And some of these are, you know, in the beginning, you inject them with something and they die. If they're little, you just, you know, maybe you use the pillow over the face or whatever. As you move on to older people, which they do, you have to do more to get rid of them. Like a 2-year-old child could fight you and you're going to win, right? Like, if I decide, hey, you know what? I've had enough of Duke, and I'm going to put you out, okay? I'm a big old dude. I probably have a chance. But if we get on the ground, I'm in trouble,
yeah.
Right? Because mm-hmm. The Duke here, he does a little jujitsu. And the dad here don't. So I don't know what you know, but I'm confident it's enough that I could face a real challenge. Like, I got to sneak up on you because... otherwise, you get me on the ground, and you're going to turn me into the human pretzel, and I'm going to cry. I'm trying to tap out, Duke. And you're like, you was going to kill me. You keep on tapping. And then it's lights out, right? I don't know. I don't know how good he is. I would say if you meet Duke on the street, you should probably call him sir. That's good. That's what I do at home. Right, sir?
Thank you for listening to Season 2 of History on the Dark Side. If you're enjoying this season, I highly recommend the following book, The Nazi Doctors by Robert J. Lifton. Not only is it valuable source material, but this is the definitive book on this subject matter. As far as documentaries go, I highly recommend Auschwitz, The Nazis and the Final Solution by the BBC. I don't think there's a better documentary about the Final Solution. I'd like to recommend iCivics. Now, this doesn't have much to do with the Nazis, but if you are a history teacher like myself, or you have a history class, or you're just interested in anything to do with American government or American history, there's a lot of materials at iCivics.com that you can use. And I also want to recommend the Anchor app. If you need to distribute or make a podcast, they make it pretty simple. Special thanks to a lot of people who helped this show happen. I'd like to thank my cohorts at Eagle Rock Middle School, Jeff and Brett. They listen to me go on and on about what I'm trying to do and help kind of guide my thoughts. I give a lot of thanks to my family. Not only do I have the kids that come up and guest host, they also do some work in the background as far as some of the engineering and helping out with the parody commercials. I especially want to thank my wife, Shayla. The hours I spend behind the microphone are hours I could be with her, and she knows that this means enough to me to be willing to make that sacrifice. So I'm very grateful for that. I suppose if you're listening to this now, you already know how to find the program, but feel free to recommend it to any of your friends that might like it as well. It's available on iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iTunes. So just about anywhere you can find a podcast, you should be able to find The Dark Side. I have recently started a YouTube channel for History on the Dark Side. So if it's easier for you to watch or to listen to the audio on YouTube, you can find me there. And currently under construction, I have a website, historyonthedarkside.com. So hopefully sometime before the end of season 2, that is up and running. Thank you once again. I'm so grateful for anybody who takes the time to listen to this. And I will see you next time on The Dark Side.